Happy Friday, everyone. This is Pam Stack, your host, and this is Office on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Office on the Air Global Radio Network. Tonight, I have a very, very special guest with me. Joe Hart is becoming quite the prolific author and very, very, very well known for his horror and thriller books and sometimes thriller horror books, which is going to be really interesting. He was born and raised in northern Minnesota, where he still resides. He's dedicated himself to writing horror and thriller fiction since the age of 9. He is now the author. He says 8 novels. I think it's way more than that. He just hasn't updated his bio. He has a lot of short stories. And his idea of fun is hanging with his family, exercising, and exploring the great outdoors. Bless him, he's in the right area of town for that. Welcome to Authors on the Air, Joe. How are you today?
I'm doing good. Thanks so much for having me, Pam.
I'm thrilled that you're on with me tonight. Thank you.
Yeah.
We were chatting a little bit before the show started, and I was telling you I'm not a huge fan of horror. I am so bad about a lot of horror that even the old Vincent Price movies when I was a kid used to scare the bejesus out of me. However, you've done something really interesting with your books. You've combined what you call thriller and horror together. I find that fascinating because aren't horror books by their nature kind of thrillers anyway? Although a thriller isn't necessarily a horror book, right?
Yeah. Yep. I feel like the two genres kind of bleed into one another.
Yes.
You know, and they kind of loan themselves a lot to one another. I feel like anytime there's, the promise of tension or suspense, that type of thing, it opens itself up to, a possibility of horror. You can kind of segue that in there. Me personally, writing as a background, coming from more of a horror background, and moving more into the thriller genre, it was easy to kind of thread that in, to a lot of my thrillers. So it was a fun way to keep a lot of my interests from when I was younger and my background and whatnot, and just kind of merge the two. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun kind of bringing those two genres together. Yeah.
And now you've added another layer because with the Dominion trilogy, you've added in dystopian, which I'm very, very fond of. And finding really well-written dystopian, a lot of people write it, but you get zombies and aliens and things like that seem a little really not dystopian to me. I guess they can be if they are in science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that you've written, for example, The Girl is your first book in the Dominion trilogy, this seems to me to be a very credible dystopian story because, well, let's have you describe it.
Yeah, I mean, the real quick pitch of Last Girl is, the female birth rate drops to less than 1% within just a matter of years. It's a precipitous drop. And, the fallout that follows that. And I really wanted to explore some social issues, misogyny and, different things like that we find in our society today. And I had a lot of fun exploring that as far as, realistically what would happen, how would we react as a society and human beings to the threat of extinction. And I think it was unique in the fact that we're looking at extinction through, females no longer being born anymore. What does that say about us? How do we treat people that are very few and far between, that type of thing? So I tried to keep it, for me, as realistic as possible, how people would react to that. And, there's always bound to be some evil people, but there's some good people, thrown in there for good measure. And I feel like that's kind of a good representation, So it was a lot of fun to explore that dystopian. Like you said, that was the first kind of dystopian novel that I kind of delved into there. And, but it lent itself very well to, my background with, writing horror and thriller. And, it was kind of blending the three different genres. So, yeah.
interesting. It's not a mashup because it's very clearly delineated what it is you're trying to say here. But I'm interested more in discussing the social themes that you try to highlight in this book. Because while you would think that since the female birth rate has gone down so much, the women who are remaining would be revered and cared for, that's not necessarily what happens with your protagonist, Zoe. She is not so lucky to be revered and cared for. And that sets up a really interesting dynamic between good and evil, or however you perceive it to be. Why did you choose that road?
Sure. It was interesting because I posed the question initially when I had the idea. Well over a year and a half ago, I had this idea of the story. And I asked my wife, you know, my wife's kind of my sounding board for all my ideas and everything else. You know, I trust her judgment on a lot of stuff. And I just asked her offhand, you know, before I had any of the characters in mind or anything, it was just this odd idea. I said, you know, if women weren't being born anymore, I said, there's only a few people left, that were able to give birth to females, and females were very few and far between. I said, how would they be treated? Would they be treated like queens, or would they be treated like slaves? And she didn't even blink. She said slaves. And it was across the board. Several other, you know, friends and family members asked the same question. They gave me the same response. And it was what I was feeling too, you know. Not to say there wouldn't be a population that would, you know, like you say, revere the women that were left, or, you know, the females that were being born. But overwhelmingly, it was this idea of almost like a control situation. And I kind of took that and, you know, I wove it into the story because I felt like that's typically, as far as human beings in the race, you know, like humankind, that's what we do. We're threatened, or we have some sort of problem, and we try to control it. We don't think of other ways around it or how to solve an issue. We try to just kind of grab hold of it and control it. And I felt like, you know, if a catastrophe like this happened, it wouldn't be dealt with diplomatically, or, you know, in respects like, you know, keeping everyone safe and contained and things like that, and keeping the peace. It would be more of a control situation. So that's kind of where I jumped off from that point, and I thought, well, here's an organization that's probably formed, and they're going to gather up females, the remaining females left, and, you know, they're going to try to fix things, but, you know, it's one of those things, like almost like a greater good type thing. There's always sacrifice involved with, you know, a greater good and the betterment of the human race and things like that. So I took that mentality and kind of incorporated it in the story. And then, you know, it was my main character, Zoe, she grew immediately. As soon as I had that idea as far as what the situation would be like, she started speaking to me. And then the rest of the story just came from her initially. So, yeah.
Was it your intention when you began writing The Last Girl to turn this into a trilogy? Or did you find the story so compelling and you looked for it and said, I think I can get a couple more books out of that?
Sure. Yeah, it was funny because, you know, my editor at my publisher, Thomas Mercer, she, you know, was asking me about my next idea. And, you know, I had this idea and I told her about it. And she said, well, that sounds like a great book. You know, and I said, I think it's going to be three books. You know, it was right off the bat. I felt like it was such a big world and, you know, different areas to explore. I felt like the story was very large and it would span more than one book. So, I went back to the drawing table and I started kind of plotting out the story and where it would go. And I knew it would have been just an enormous book if it was one single tome. So I basically sat down and, you know, got the whole story laid out and, you know, and it fell pretty nicely into three books. And then I handed it to her and they said, yeah, let's go for it. You know, let's turn this into a trilogy. And, you know, and it's obviously evolved from where I started. I think it's just kind of organically, like a lot of books do. You start out and you say, this is where it's going to end up. And, you know, it changes and and evolves as you write. So it's been fun, you know, looking at my blueprint and then seeing actually where it ends up. It's definitely a different place.
Where it goes.
Yeah.
So will you rewrite the blueprint when let's just say you've already written book two. I know that. So that's final trade. But when you went on to write the next book, which won't be out until September, did you find that whole second series, the second book that you had envisioned, had totally changed and you had to wipe the slate clean and start again?
I didn't have to start again. I definitely had the general idea where I wanted to take it, as far as, the second book.
Sure.
And I felt like my character, my main character, I really just followed her because she was evolving. She, she changed a lot in the first book. She found kind of her own strength as she, went through the first book and her story. And, the second book was definitely her searching truly for who she was and really looking for her origins. And that's what the whole second book was about, is she's really looking to see who she is. She's worried about, her humanity and what she's capable of. And as far as violence and how far she will go for the people that she cares about.
Sure, because she has survival on her mind as well, right?
So she's
got to have that. She's got to have that. Interesting.
Yeah.
Are you generally a plotter anyway when you are writing? Do you start off with a plot and then go from there? How does it work for you?
Yeah, for me, when I have an idea that won't kind of go away. That's usually when I know I have something, the next book that I need to write about. It's when an idea that kind of gnaws at me. All times of the day, I'll be thinking about characters and dialogue and or what could happen in the story. Then I know that that's, kind of the next project. Usually what happens, I'll sit down and I'll say, okay, well, what is the story about? Who are these characters really? Because I always feel like the characters are absolutely the center of the book, and plot evolves from them. And if your readers care about the characters, you they're going to love the book.
Sure.
So I usually spin plot and twists and theme and metaphor and everything out from the characters and who they are and who they become and what their arcs are. So if I have that, and the characters are definitely, people that I'm going to follow and I really am interested in, then I'll sit down and I'll do a really loose outline. I'll do kind of a skeleton as far as the outline goes. I'll
right.
hit certain points. Mm-hmm. I'll say, well, this is interesting. I want to hit this point or comment on this, and kind of get an idea where I want to end up. And then I like leaving myself a lot of room to work though. Enough room to be creative and have the plot change and have my characters change and react how they will as they get deeper and deeper into the story. So I play a lot of the line there. I like to plot somewhat so I have a general guideline to go by, but then I like to leave myself some room to work. So that's kind of my process. Yeah.
When I was reading up on you before you came on the show, I was reading that you started writing when you were 8 or 9 years old, and you've been writing ever since. Tell me about when you were a kid. How did you get interested in writing?
Oh, gosh. I'd probably have to trace that back to my mom. My mom is a huge reader. I remember going with her to the public library here in my hometown, and I was always amazed because she would check out at least 4 or 5 books, and we usually came to the library at least once a month, sometimes twice a month. And I would always be amazed at the fact that she would read 4 or 5 novels in a month, in 3 weeks to a month. And she was just a really avid reader, probably attributed to the fact that she's an insomniac too. So she's all up all night reading. But it definitely inspired me
Wow.
as far as reading and whatnot. So that's probably where, my love of reading and writing came from. I fell in love with stories.
Do you remember
in general to begin with.
Do you remember what you used to read?
Oh, yeah. I mean, starting out, I read a lot of, young adult stuff. I would read, Gary Paulson, Hatchet. I read a lot of Goosebumps, a lot of R.L. Stein.
Sure.
And, things
nice
like
man.
That. Yeah. I love, I'm really looking forward. I'm hoping to meet Mr. Stein at BoucherCon this year. He's going to be one of the guests at BoucherCon I'm going to. So
yeah. He's usually, I'll see you there too. He usually is at Thriller Fest every, he's a very nice, just a really cool guy. I have to tell you, you're going to be so impressed when you meet him. He's just a lovely man. I had one of my original Goosebumps books. I'm pretty old, And I said, would you sign my book? And he said, of course I will. He was so nice. He's quite a storyteller, too. I never read those too often, but I say for some reason, I love those books. Isn't that funny?
Yeah, definitely.
So
yeah,
wrote your first story when you were 9?
Yeah, my mom, the same thing there, my mom had a electronic typewriter. You had to feed paper into, and I had the cartridges and stuff, and I kind of loved the sound it made, when I typed on it and whatnot. So it was a step up from the regular typewriter, but it wasn't a computer yet, and I was kind of in between. So that's what I started writing on when I was a kid, and started kind of just imitating short stories and that I had read, and just worked up from there. I started making up my own stuff and graduated into kind of poetry. I was really big into poetry in kind of the middle school and high school. Got a few poems published in some anthologies and whatnot. And from there, it was college. I wrote some in college, but I wasn't real serious about it. I would just kind of, here and there, I would write a little bit. But it was about 6-7 years now ago, I started getting really serious, and I really clamped down, and I thought, this is really what I want to do with my life. This is what I want to do as a profession. And I buckled down and just really, I really started writing and trying to get better at the craft and, reading all different forms of genre and nonfiction and different things like that. And that's kind of where I ended up. And then I started self-publishing, my first few books and whatnot. So
your first collection was published in 2011, correct?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so you're fairly, almost a newbie to this business,
mm-hmm.
yet
yeah.
you are exceptionally prolific.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, first of all, let me ask you, what was your major in college?
I majored in English, yep.
Okay. All right. There you go. So you kind of stayed close. You were close.
Yep.
You just weren't really,
yep.
You hadn't defined it yet. Good for you. So you started writing, you did a collection in 2011. And then after that, you kind of alternated between short stories and novels. And, but a lot. You had a novel and 2 short stories that came out the same year. And then you had 3 novels and another short story in the same year, and then 3 more novels in 1 year, and then 2015 it exploded, and here you are now with so many pieces of work under your belt. Do you have a lot more stories you want to tell?
I do. Yeah, I do. I feel like, it's kind of nice because I'm at a point in my career now where I feel like I can kind of take a breath and step back and think about really, take some time to think about, the next project, because it seemed like the first few years of my career, I had all these stories that were almost piled up against one another, trying to get out. And it wasn't, halfway through a novel, I would have the next idea and, and so forth. It was, several years of that where I had one novel after the other, or a short story or a novella, just sitting there in the wings.
Right.
And, not to say that I don't have a few sitting there now, but, I kind of like stepped back a little bit, and been a little more analytical about, where I'm headed. And, I'm trying to dissect a little bit, like what the next thing I really want to fall in love with and spend the next 6-8 months writing about, something that really interests me. And, I really want to, you know, delve into the theme and metaphor within whatever I'm looking to write about. So yeah, it felt like it was a lot coming out all at once. It seemed like just a huge list that was just sitting inside me that needed to get out. So yeah.
Well, good for you, because your reviews have been spectacular. Each and every time you've released a book, you've had so many good reviews. And, you know, I was trying to look, trying to give a little look-see at some of them and see what people are saying. But by an overwhelming amount, people love what you write. I wonder, just out of curiosity, when you got your first one-star review, which is what I call having your one-star review cherry popped, because every author has to have that, how did you feel when that happened to you?
Boy, you know, I can't say I specifically remember it, but, you know, it's, you know, it definitely, I mean, I can just kind of pull from, you know, every time you get a one-star review, because it's, you know, you never like to see it, you know, you never look down and you see, you know, this one didn't enjoy your work. It's one of those things where, you know, I think about it in the sense that writers are, in a sense, entertainers. You know, that's really what we set out to do. We write something, and we polish it, and we try to make it the very best we can make it. And we just, the best thing that can happen to us is that people say nice things, that they enjoyed what we wrote. That's right. I mean, the best payoff for us, you know, that's wonderful. It's beyond anything that we, you know, any other, you know, rewards that we get. If someone enjoyed what we created, that's the best thing we can get. And when someone comes back with, you know, they didn't enjoy it, you really have to put it in perspective and just say, you know, not everyone's going to love what you do. You know, you're not going to speak to everybody. And it's just the diversity of people reading your work. It's wonderful that you reach people, in a sense that you reach somebody that didn't enjoy your work, because you know that your work is getting out there and, you know, it's broadening, it's crossing different, you know, genres and, you know, interests and things like that. But it's fine. I'm comfortable with people not enjoying my work, and you know, it's just one of those things that you definitely have to be expecting.
You have to
when
grow
you
a thick
out,
skin,
so.
Right? You have to put. You have to grow a thick skin. The thing is, though, Joe, it seems to me that you've had so much overwhelming positive reviews that you can be okay with the fact that there are a few who don't really like you. Now, had it been the other way around and the pyramid was reversed, then I'd say you had a problem. But, you know, I'm looking, The Last Girl was released in March. It's only the end of June, and you have well over 2,300 reviews just on Amazon alone, which is amazing. That's a remarkable amount of people who are commenting on your work and all in all liking it. So I think you're doing your job. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
I also noticed, you're welcome, I noticed that on your website, and by the way, if listeners want to go there, it's joehartbooks.com, that you've been blurbed by Keelan Patrick Burke. Great guy. He's been on my show a few times. I really like him. He just doesn't understand. He says, why would you ever want to talk to me if you don't like horror? The first thing he said to me when he came on one of my shows. But he's a great guy. And he's very talented. He's a very talented guy. And, of course, you've also been blurbed by Blake Crouch, who everybody, I think, knows after The Pines. They'll know who he is. Another spectacular writer. You are sitting in very good company.
Yes.
You think?
Yeah, I do. I really attribute a lot of my success to, you know, other people. I mean, that's, you know, I've been fortunate, you know, really. I mean, when you think about success, I don't believe anybody that says, you know, they rose up completely on their own. Success is, you know, if you surround yourself with yes,
sure.
Exactly. So yeah, no, I can't say enough things about Keelan. He's been a wonderful guy. We've corresponded quite a bit. He's done a ton of my covers. I love everything he writes.
Yeah, he's great. He's a great cover artist. Yes,
oh,
he is.
So talented. Same thing with Blake. Blake's been phenomenal. You know, a guy that I've read for years, got the opportunity to meet him and you know, talk with him one-on-one. And he's been wonderful guy. So, yeah.
Oh, fantastic. I'm so glad.
Yeah. So thrilled to be able to be, you know, associated with some of those names. So, yeah.
Writers are kind of a collegial group anyway. You're not competing against them. You're competing against yourself to do well. There's not a competition, really. You only are trying to do better each time. Am I right about that?
Yeah, absolutely. You're always competing against what you did the last time. Yep.
So my question to you is, if that is the case, when you look at your first releases, the first books that you put out, do you notice a change or a style difference or any type of a difference in the first books that you wrote? For example, I know that Lineage was a huge success, and Outpost was too, for the short. Mm-hmm. Do you notice a difference in your writing from Lineage to now The Last Girl?
Definitely. Yes, definitely.
Do you really?
Yeah. Yep, definitely. You know, I feel like the basis of my storytelling is still there. You know, I always had that, you know, that knack, I feel like, for the really kind of the large, you know, overlooking story with all the characters
sure.
involved and the twists and everybody, you know. But, no, I feel like as far as the craft goes and, you know, almost, you know, leveling up your writing each book, I feel like I try to do that with each work. You know, I try to always make the writing tighter and leaner and stronger, and, you know, less
sure.
is more is kind of one of those things that I
right.
live by. It's, you know, if you can,
absolutely.
If you can evoke emotion from a, you know, a single sentence instead of a paragraph, that's what you're shooting for. So yeah, I definitely feel like I've evolved a little bit since then. Yep.
Yeah. My friend Jeff Deaver says you have to use an economy of words to say what you need to say. Because
that's
if you're
right.
writing a book at 75,000 words, let's say, is an average book nowadays,
mm-hmm.
better to have more action and really fast dialogue than do so much background. And so if you could, like you just said, if you can say it in one sentence versus three or four or a paragraph, you certainly are better off, because it keeps the pace of the book really snaps along, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
When you
yes,
when you
does.
Tighten it up like that, I
yes.
wonder, do you ever, when you're reading your first draft, I don't know how many times you draft and reread and mm-hmm. redraft, but when you are reading your story, whether it's in the beginning or the finished product, do you ever read any of it out loud, read your dialogue out loud, or does it help you to do that, or have you never tried it?
Yeah, definitely read a lot out loud, especially the dialogue. Yes. You know, I'll definitely read a lot of the action and stuff in my head. You know, if there's any introspection for the character, if they're in kind of their own thoughts a little bit, I'll read that silently. But any of the dialogue, yeah, a lot of times I'll say it out loud, especially if a sentence sounds a little clunky to me. You know, I'll read through
yeah.
it and say, you know, does that really sound like something someone would say, or would they say it a little different? So, no, that definitely streamlines the process, you know, for me, keeping that dialogue easy flowing and natural. Yes, definitely.
Do you have any difficulty writing from the POV of a woman?
You know, I didn't. Zoe was, you know, my first, you know, main character that was a female. And she kind of came to me fully formed. She was,
wow.
You know, I knew exactly who she was. It was not difficult to write at all. I felt like, you know, she was such a straight cut character as far as what her goals were and who she was going to become. It felt very natural to me. I tried not to think about it because, of course, that's always one of the concerns. It's like, you know, if you're a male author writing a female character or vice versa, you know, you don't want to sound, you know, strange or unauthentic or anything like that, you know. And I just really, you know, she was such a natural voice when I started writing that, I thought, well, you know, I might be wrong, but I felt like this is just definitely who she is. And I thought, well, if people don't like it, okay, that's fine. But that's who she was. And people seem to respond pretty well to it. She, you know, she comes across as, you know, a very strong character. So I'm really pleased with the reception so far. So, yeah.
I would imagine because you're not writing a story that necessitates her to have all the girly, and I mean it in the kindest way, because obviously I'm girly, but you are writing about larger issues than female issue or this particular girl's issue. So you're looking at things on a broader scale, and that may have been why she came to you fully formed. It's fascinating to me. Terrific. We were talking earlier about books that you like, and we kind of had a chuckle about Cormac McCarthy and Stephen King. I know that you also, and of course Blake, and J.K. Rowling, who wouldn't love her, but you also like Justin Cronin, who I happen to think is brilliant also. And he has a very interesting twist on the way he writes as well. Don't you agree?
Yes. Yeah. No, I love Justin. He, you know, he just, for me, he exploded onto the scene, you know, the writing scene with The Passage. You know, he had published a couple other literary novels that, you know, I haven't had a chance to read yet, but he, you know, he's just been just a fantastic author to follow through that journey of his trilogy. You know, I just finished.
The latest trilogy is
City
amazing,
of Mirrors,
isn't it?
Yeah.
A mind-boggling. It's so good. The writing is just so spectacular. But let me just tell you, so you don't think otherwise, when I read The Last Girl, I felt the exact same thing as when I read his book, too. So it's a story I had not heard, but the writing is very tight. It's very authentic. And I had an emotional shift reading that. And obviously, you're right when you said earlier that your reader has to connect with a character. You may not like them or whatever, but there has to be a connection. I think for me, that's critical. If there is a wonderful story to be told, but no character who anchors that story, I kind of get lost in it. I get, you know, it's like you're telling this lovely tale, but where are the people? Does that make sense to you? Do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Yeah. Characters are so important. I mean, as far as that goes, you know, because I think as far as readers, we want to see a little bit of ourselves reflected in the story, and whether it's the good parts or bad parts, that's so crucial to see, you know, a little bit of ourselves. So, yeah.
I agree with you. Is every antagonist always bad? Or is there some good intention in the antagonist, particularly in this book?
Yeah, absolutely.
So
I mean,
could be doing things, wrong things for the right reason and really truly believe they're doing the right thing?
Yes, yeah. I can't remember who said the quote, but it's, you know, everybody's a hero in their own story. And I translate that to, you know, antagonists. You know, I feel like you can empathize with a terrible person, with a you know, a villain in a story, not sympathize, you know, but empathize,
with their motivation.
You can understand.
Sure.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's so much more powerful than just making an evil person because they're evil. You know, evil being evil for the sake of that trait doesn't have the punch or the power that if you can look inside this terrible, evil, bad person and say, I can understand why they did that. And if you can look at them and their actions and see where they're coming from, it's going to make that story all the more involved for you. You know,
That's true.
They're
not one dimensional that way. The character isn't one dimensional and not one that you kind of take to the, you know, you push to the side. If you have a multidimensional antagonist, I think it heightens the story because now you're trying to anticipate or you're wondering, oh my God, what's next? And in this in a thriller,
of any kind, whether it's a horror thriller or dystopian thriller, thrillers in general, I think that's what you want. That's the reaction you want your reader to have, isn't it?
It is. It is definitely.
Okay.
It's that, like you said, you wonder what's going to happen next. And when it happens, it doesn't seem unbelievable. You know, if you stretch that, suspension of disbelief too far, you know, people get lost
right.
in that sometimes. So,
right.
if they can look at, you know, a terrible person's actions and saying, you know, I wouldn't have done that myself, but I can understand why they did it, you know.
What led them to do that, sure.
Yes, yeah, because,
sure.
you know, to me, you know, an antagonist is just, it's the darker image of the protagonist a lot of times, you know.
Yeah.
They have their own story,
yeah.
they have their background, they have their scars and wounds and you know, their feelings and emotions and everything. So it's oftentimes as fun or more fun to explore the villain, you know, in the story
right.
than the protagonist, you know? So, yeah.
Well, and your protagonist can't be one-sided either, I'm assuming. You can't say this person is the embodiment of good unless
no.
you're writing a story about a saint or something, and even then I question it. But
yeah.
interesting, very interesting to me. I don't want to take up all your time, but I do have a few last questions. When I'm
yeah.
lucky enough,
yeah.
one of my guests will agree to do something I call Final Five. It's five quick
yeah.
questions and five quick answers. So
okay.
are you game? You want to play?
I'm so game. Absolutely.
In the meantime, I want to thank you for doing this. This has been a lot of fun. I've learned so much from you, and I'm truly, I'm fangirling here because I love the book, and I can't wait for the next part two of the trilogy to come out. So my first question to you is, you're welcome. My first question would be, whose book is on your nightstand right now?
Oh, let's see. I am reading Disappearance at Devil's Rock by Paul Tremblay right now.
Oh, Paul is great,
so,
isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Love Paul's work.
Oh,
yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah.
yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm yeah. fantastic. Oh, that's a good one. You chose a great one. Joe, is there any book that you've read more than one time and will probably go back and read again?
Yeah, I'd have to go back, you know, our conversation earlier about Cormac McCarthy. I've read The Road
yeah.
probably, four or five times. Yes.
Yeah.
And,
you read it whether you have to or not. Once a year, you've got
yeah.
to devour one book like that, correct?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. The story and the writing is so beautiful and lyrical, and it's, yeah. Nope, that's my go-to book, so. Yep.
Very good. Tell me something on your bucket list.
Oh, bucket list. Well, for a while there, it was climb Mount Everest, but my wife put the kibosh on that here several years back.
Okay.
So
smart
I would
woman.
Say...
You have a family. She doesn't want you climbing Mount Everest.
I know. I would say, one of my bucket lists, I definitely want to go see Stephen King, do a talk about one of his books. I haven't had the chance to go and see him live personally. I've watched all of his talks about different books when they come out
yeah.
and whatnot. And he's absolutely my hero. He's who I grew up on reading, and he's somebody that I would love to go see, and if possible, you know, shake his hand and thank him for my career, because I wouldn't be
where I am
without
him. I have to tell
you that I
request him all the time. Every time he puts a new book out or he's out touring or something, I request him, and they always say, nope, he's not doing any other interviews. He goes on NPR, and he does, he does appearances, but to very specific venues. And so I keep saying, the day Stephen King comes on my show, I'm going to retire. You know, so it's good that he hasn't agreed to come on. But then again, you know, what a way to end a show, right?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Is there anyone you can think of besides Stephen King that you might like to collaborate on a book with?
Oh gosh. I would love to collaborate with Blake Crouch someday. He's, like I said, he is one of my favorite authors. I would love the chance to sit down and write a book with him someday. Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, how fantastic. And so my last question is, are you hoping that one of your books gets turned into a television or a film piece?
Well, I'm an author, so absolutely.
Which would you like to see? Which would you like to see in light?
You know, I think I got to go with, you know, the trilogy, you know, The Last Girl, the Dominion trilogy, because I think as far as all my work, I think it translates really well to the screen or to a visual media. And I think it's a big enough idea and a really big story that would work really well as far as cinema goes. So that's what I'd like to see. I'd love to see that on a big screen.
Well, here's my bonus question. Having said that, and yes, you'd like to see The Last Girl on screen, and because you have such a terrific character with this particular book, who would you like to see play your protagonist?
Oh, see, Zoe. You know, I do have someone picked out. I'm glad you asked.
I knew you would.
The young woman who played in the new Star Wars, Force Awakens, I think her name is Daisy Ridley, I believe.
Yeah,
I was really taken with her performance in the movie, and it was funny because someone had asked me that earlier in the year, you know, who would you have play Zoe? And I didn't know offhand. I thought, well, you know, there's quite a few actresses that would, you know, do a really great job, I thought. But then, you know, when the movie came out, I went and saw it, and I thought, well, this is Zoe. This is who it is.
There
this actress
go.
would absolutely just be excellent.
You
know, yeah.
Very
so
cool.
This,
very
yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
Folks, I am speaking to Jo Hart, whose incredible body of work is winning rave reviews everywhere. If you've not had a chance to pick up a book, please go get The Last Girl. It is a magnificent piece of work. It is a dystopian thriller, the first of a trilogy. And we've been mostly talking about that book. That's not to diminish any of the other books that Jo has written. Jo, I can't thank you enough for being with me tonight. I hope that maybe one day you'll come back and maybe you and Blake can have a conversation author to author.
Oh. That would be a lot of fun. Yeah, no, that would be
okay.
Great, and I
well,
really appreciate
well,
you having me.
Well, you're friends
yeah.
with him, so you tell him that you know that the offer stands for you two to sit behind the mic and me just in the background being your production assistant. And I'd love to have you both come back anytime you want.
Oh, that'd be a lot of fun. I'll talk to him. I'll see if he's up for it.
It would. Please do, and you know how to find me. I thank you so much for taking so much of your Friday night with me. I really, really appreciate it. And it's been a pleasure, and I look forward to having you back again. Okay?
Oh, yeah. Thanks so much, Pam, for having me on.
Thank you so much, Jo. Have a really great weekend, and thanks for letting me take you away from your family. On Monday, everybody, Owen Lucanon is coming. Then Tuesday, Joshua Hood. Wednesday, Roxanne St. Clair, and then I don't know what's happening the rest of the week. I got a whole bunch of people. Ah, John Mann from Steel Team 6 is coming. He writes a really interesting book, so I hope you'll stay with me. Have a great weekend. Go get The Last Girl by Jo Hart. Thank you and good night. Thanks, Jo. Good night.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Thanks, folks, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.